before I get started here, I need to tell you that I do have this awesome, wonderful friendship relationship with Ken and Phyllis. And one of the benefits of that is that I get to come and stay in the guest room and have lots of laughs, which is my favorite part. And we also get to talk about, you know, how we can solve the world's problems, which is excellent. And one of the things for me is this deep gratitude that I feel to Ken for his mentorship and his collegiality as we sit on the finance committee of British Columbia Conference together. And he was telling me a story that's nonfiction. And I was asking if he would like to share that just before our reflection today. And he said he would. So in gratitude for Ken and gratitude for you, please come.
On June 17th, I stood before you in my role as treasurer and shared the news of the gift of Ron and Shirley Hill and Shirley's challenge to all of us to pay off that mortgage ASAP. You will also be aware that very afternoon, we received a very generous gift sufficient to pay off the mortgage, and within a few days, Knox was debt-free. Not the end of the story. At that time, I also let you know that our estimates indicated that we could be headed for an operating deficit to the end of June of some $23,000. And I asked that you consider a donation to the operating fund to mitigate the potential deficit and the amount necessary then to draw from the capital reserve fund. In true Knox fashion, you have responded. By no longer having to make a mortgage payment, together with an increase in monthly giving, plus several additional gifts specifically towards reducing the projected deficit, as well as the residual income from the Organ Works concerts and some reduction in expected expenses, I am delighted to report that we have ended the fiscal year with a very modest surplus. That's right, surplus, $108.79. However, that's a dramatic difference from $23,000 deficit. This is truly incredible, and all I can say is thank you, thank you. The people of Knox are amazing. So turn to the person beside you and say thank you, and celebrate this gift of gratitude.
You guys are so obedient, too. It just fits so beautifully with my reflection on salt and light and smoothing the road. So by paying off the mortgage, I think, oh, in Pentecost, we should have a fire. Yeah, excellent. I love fire. Never mind. Not when it's burning our forests, only, you know, contained. But lighting and smoothing the way for more mission, more ministry. My goodness, you are my shining star congregation, and it makes me so happy to come and be with you all. Just need to say that. You make me a little perklempt. If we're still talking about stats, many of you will know that a big part of my job is to work with congregations around Mission and Service, which is our national fund that funds work here in Canada and in 92 countries around the world. It's an amazing opportunity, and as a denomination, we are second to none in Canada for doing this kind of work. And it makes me proud, excited, and we are that light, that house built on a hill that can't be hidden. Right? And so when we talk about salt, what does it mean when somebody says, oh, that guy, he's the salt of the earth? What does that mean? Of course, it's biblical, right? Yeah. To me, it means grounded, kind, thoughtful, shirt off your back kind of guy, right? Kind of person who really understands what it's like to be well-seasoned, right? And salty, and preserves all of the wonderful Christian ideals, right? Embodies that. Salt of the earth kind of guy. And so there are a lot of folks in this congregation who are salt of the earth people. I looked up in my stats, because we are also a denomination that keeps a lot of stats. And I looked back 5 years, so 2013, and just to see what this congregation had given to mission service to the people of the world. And it was about $40,000 in a year in 2013. You need to know that is in the top 10%. Thank you. Amazing. And at that time, you had about 400 households, right? So when we put our information in so the stats can be produced, we have to say how many contributing households do we have in our congregation. So it was about 400 at that time. So I looked up last year, 2017, and you're down about 100 households, which actually isn't bad. I need to tell you, please don't be upset about that. Mostly it's attrition. I can tell you how many funerals you're doing. So folks are going, and with them are going their funding to mission and service. So part of my work is to lift that up again so that we can inspire the next generation. So in 2017, it was $35,000. So 5 years later, $5,000 less, but actually per person. So there's fewer people. So you're following the trend perfectly. Fewer people giving more money from their heart, from their bank account, from their assets, from their love. So I also want to thank you for that. You are stellar. It's amazing to me how you can do that, because the stats also are about 68% of people. Of course, it differs from congregation to congregation, but the average is about 68% of people actually have an offering at all to their congregation. So that means some folks aren't giving any money. So 68% of that 68%, between 35 and 40% actually also give to mission and service. So that if you're looking at your envelope, that would say local givings and to the wider church givings. So mission and service is the wider church givings. So about 35 to 40%. So that means in Canada, 25 to 30% of people are giving to mission and service, which means that there's about 75%, 60 to 75% of people that aren't giving at all to mission and service. So to me, that's good news, because I have lots of work to do for the next 25 years. And I hope that you will tell the story, encourage your neighbors and your friends, because I'm going to tell a few stories around the work that mission and service does. So recently, I told you I moved to Salmon Arm, and it's hotter there and sunnier. I'm just saying. And so when we talk about a light, I am feeling the light. But in the stillness of the night, the world takes on a different perspective. We can see light in a new way. And I've really noticed the difference in the what we call light pollution, right? So from moving from Surrey, kind of the middle of the Lower Mainland, to Salmon Arm, my husband Rick and I now make a point of going out on clear nights in the dark and sitting and looking at the stars, because it is amazing to me how much you can see when the light is out, right? So the light smooths our path, but starlight smooths our path too. And it makes us think of when we were children, right? And when the light was fresh and new. We live in a world of contradictions, of hope and of despair, of joy and of struggle. Images of displaced people flash through our minds. Worries about the future we are leaving for those who come after us can fill our hearts with a sense of sadness. And yet, for every troubling moment, there is a moment of hope. For every hill and valley, there is a clear path for us to walk together. I really connect with the new creed from the United Church of Canada. And in the Creed, it assures us that we are not alone. We live in... Yay! This is the light that shows us the way, right? Together we walk a path of faith, surrounded by a great cloud of witness. And yet, there are times when we feel we have lost our way. Many vulnerable people in our midst and in our community are in desperate need of healing and of hope. Many are seeking a place of warm welcome, a place of safety, a place where the love and hope and community can be shared, a place of practical care. In the reading from Matthew this morning, Jesus tells us that we are here to be light, bringing out the God colors of the world. He is handing off to us the responsibility to be the light in the world, to bring encouragement, comfort, and compassion to others. All Jesus ever asks of us in return is the precious gift of his light, is to just share it, right? With others, and to straighten the curved and rocky path many have to travel, to make it smooth and easier for all to navigate. Our United Church Creed also states we are not alone, we live in God's world, and as such are urged to love and serve others. We know God's work is our work. That's the reason for the church to fulfill God's mission, right? Heads are nodding. Yep, we know this is what, we know this, you say, yeah, but there are so many requests to support locally and nationally and internationally that it is at times overwhelming. Whom do we help? How do we help? Our mission service makes it easier to answer those questions in my mind. Right here in Canada and around the world, our gifts for mission and service are signs of our salt and God color in the world. Our gifts provide the right support at the right time to people who need it most. Our United Church works in partnership with organizations across Canada and around the world, and they are well vetted, well loved, and we know them really well. We are blessed with mission and service partners who are longtime companions. They join with us in seeking justice, loving kindness, and journeying with the lost and the alone. Our partners live out the calling to walk with those on the margins year after year. They focus on the needs of the people on the margins. So the people on the margins. The needs of the people in the communities our partners serve are many and varied. Today, I would like to share with you stories from three areas of ministry supported by our gifts to mission and service. So Aboriginal ministries and the ongoing work of healing and reconciliation. Support for refugees through private sponsorship and resettlement. And the human rights work of our mission and service partners in Kenya. So our commitment to reconciliation between Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal people. In December 2015, the Truth and Reconciliation Commission made public its final report to the Canadian people. It was actually received in June of that year, but wasn't released until December. This marked the end of the Commission's mandate and the beginning of the next stage of the path for reconciliation as a church and as a society. And we have been the light and the leaders in Canada on this particular issue. In 1883, Sir John A. Macdonald's government intentionally built residential schools far away from families and communities as a way to assimilate the indigenous children to mainstream Christian society and do away with the Indian problem. The residential school experience is one of our darkest, most troubling chapters in our collective history. The Honorable Justice Murray Sinclair, which is Manitoba's first Aboriginal judge, was the chair of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, and he said that from the first story they heard, we understood from that moment very deeply not only the significance of what we were doing, but the sacredness of it. It is the survivors' telling of their stolen childhoods that has shaken us all awake. says Marie Wilson, a member of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission who spoke at the United Church's 42nd General Council. She urged those assembled to always feel outrage at injustice, to hope for what is possible, and to respect that every life has the potential to make a difference. Love, she said, has the power to transform a life, a relationship, a church, a country. So our gifts to mission service support Aboriginal ministries and the work of healing and reconciliation, and just a few of the examples that are being done. There's a week-long camp called Wampum. It's held for Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal youth at Five Oaks Centre in Paris, Ontario, and the surrounding area. It's one of several church-led reconciliation-themed youth events emerging across the country. Youth learn about the history and damage of residential schools, as well as the Indigenous history and cultural values. Number two, the Haida language is threatened. So that's right here in British Columbia, right? Only 16 fluent speakers aged 75 to 85 are left. 10 elders teach at the Skidigat Haida Immersion Program in British Columbia. They teach new learners and record and document the language with community support. That's pretty powerful stuff, too. Number three, the Santee Salto... Is it Santee? How would you pronounce that? S-A-U-L-T-E-A-U-X. Sioux? Salty Sioux? Okay. I'll go with Salto because it feels right, but if I'm wrong, I'm sorry. Spiritual Center is an Aboriginal theological and ministry training program of the United Church of Canada, and it prepares Aboriginal people for lay and ordered ministry. This theological school affirms a style of leadership appropriate to Aboriginal culture and Aboriginal church experience. It develops and tests curricula and models to uphold this style of learning. The center also provides cross-cultural and spiritual awareness to the non-Aboriginal community that contributes to reconciliation. I also think that's a beacon of light. It helps us to understand more deeply the real issues, right? The second one I'm going to lift up today is Walking with Refugees. Now, my husband Rick, who you met last time, he was playing the drums. He's in Salmon Arm today because he has to work. And he is working at a company that has hired two refugee folks from Syria. They're actually Kurdish from Kurdistan, but they were brought here from Syria. And they're just hilarious guys who speak very little English. So you can imagine my husband and these two guys teaching each other how to swear in each other's languages. And he thinks that's how we bring them in. I'm like, okay, but what he's doing is making friends. Oh my goodness. And isn't that what we want for our refugee folks? We don't want to change them or anything. We just want to be able to speak the language and have some laughs and enjoy their children and have them enjoy our children. One of the fellows is a very keen soccer player, and so we go to his games locally after work, usually. And he's like, oh, my group is here. Because if nobody else has anyone coming to see the games. I'm not sure whether they're just super bad or whether it's just that's not what's done. But Rick and I go, and we just have a great time. So some of that work that we're doing is being a friend, I think, with the refugee folks that are coming here. And I don't think there's a community in BC that hasn't sponsored some refugees and focused mostly through churches and through communities of faith. And it makes me proud. So our gifts with our church, I understand that you've done some work here with some refugees, which is amazing. And sometimes we can just sort of help with the money part. Sometimes, like I know some congregations that are literally providing accommodation, food, clothing, household items, you know, let's get you settled, let's get the kids into school, let's, you know, so there's lots of amazing work going on by our Canadian society. And our gifts also support the Montreal City Mission, which offers refugee settlement and support programs. So in 1910, a British Methodist pastor named Bowman Tucker founded Montreal City Mission to welcome and provide services for immigrants arriving from Europe. Over a century later, that spirit of hospitality is still thriving. And refugees are helped through the Montreal City Mission Just Solutions Clinic, as in Just Solutions Clinic, not Just Solutions Clinic, right? Which provides free legal information and assistance, provides advocacy and accompaniment to vulnerable and disadvantaged individuals in the area of refugee and immigration law. And that's, I think that's a powerful program for us to support. The Montreal City Mission has two social work students supporting Syrian refugees of all ages, including at their summer day camp, Camp Cosmos. Since 1985, the Anglican United Refugee Alliance, so that's us with the Anglicans, right, has been working with churches in southern Ontario to provide hope and refugee resettlement. They are working in this historic moment to facilitate record levels of refugee sponsorships of refugees from Syria and other parts of the world. Pretty powerful. Pretty powerful. Human rights work with global partners in Kenya, many of you will know because I was here last year talking about my pilgrimage to Kenya to come and see the work of mission and service in Kenya. So connecting with our partners there, going out to see in the very small villages and in some of the very urban areas of Nairobi, we got to go and see how our mission dollars are doing. So our gifts for mission and service, like I said, support 92 global partners in 21 countries for their work on issues of human rights, sustainable agriculture, health, and microcredit. So do we know what microcredit is? It's where we lend a small amount of money to an individual for them to start a business so they can become self-supporting and they do or do not pay it back. It's usually a very small amount because our money goes really far in other countries, right? So I would like to share with you the story of an amazing partner in Kenya that I came across, and they're called Pembizo. And some of you will remember that I was privileged to be on that pilgrimage. Pembizo is a partner that supports the lives and rights of the LGBTQ people in Kenya. And the pilgrims, that's us, we were told one day that you'd be having dinner late, it would be after dark, that we would be in the far back meeting room, the staff were all off shift by then, and we would have a guest speaker come to share. And we're like, okay, that's interesting. And so as we entered the room to have our dinner, there were three people there, and they told us of terrible life-threatening abuse. In Kenya, it's illegal to be gay. If you're found out, you'll be ostracized by your family and your friends. You'll be beaten. Sometimes people are killed. They're usually not employed. So you get it. We ate with these folks, listened to their stories, and at the end of the day, they told us they had not eaten in 2 days. So we sent the leftovers home with them, and they would have a 3-hour ride across the desert in the dark back to their place where they lived. And it was secret, right? It's so weird as Canadians to think that they would be taking their lives in their hands to come and tell us a story about how they live in secret and how they really try to work and to create jobs where they are and to live with a secret self inside. Three of the folks that we were traveling with would identify as part of the LGBTQ community. And 3 days later, they packed up a huge meal and left after dark. And they traveled to the complex 3 hours, taking their lives in their hands. And they went to share a meal, to leave supplies and food, and provide fellowship. So very practical, very tangible help. And returning in the wee hours of the morning, utterly spent and so grateful to live in a country where they could be who God meant for them to be. Other Kenyan partners, they looked the other way while we were providing for this group. They're like, yep, we can't help you. It is difficult for local partners to support aid to the LGBTQ community, but our church, our United Church of Canada, through mission service, asked of the Pembezo group, what is your most difficult thing to fund? How can we walk with you? I am proud to support that kind of journey. Proud of our church for recognizing the desperate need and for them to just ask, how can we be of help, right? There are no Christmas boxes full of yo-yos and pencils, right? It was literally, what do you need? And so we do educational programming. We help with transportation, those kinds of things for folks. So Jesus told us we are to be the light of the world, to draw out the God colors of this world for all to see. And I like to think that mission and service giving is the most faithful kind of giving that we can do. We are giving our hard-earned dollars and trusting that they will be used to the best advantage to help people we will never meet and know. It was a privilege for me to meet those people, but I understand that as a privilege. We will never meet, and yet we are a denomination who gives and trusts. We do our homework, and then we send the money. It's brilliant. We're aware of their suffering, and we ask those hard questions. So that Jesus light shines through our gifts of mission and service. Our gifts enable ministries that smooth the way to make the journey one that is shared, right? Part of that human condition. So I'm very sure that as a denomination, we can do so much more. It makes me so happy that as we're going through all that stuff that's happening above us with reconfiguration of our denomination and how that's going to be more streamlined, more clear, more transparent to ourselves and to the world, I'm proud of that too. It's hard to ask those questions, but it means I have lots of great work to do, and it thrills me to be able to do it. This congregation is extremely generous, and I want to thank you in person. Thank you. More than just a certificate, more than anything, I just want to make sure that you all know that your continued support makes a huge difference in the lives of people, right? So, you're a congregation that gets it, one of my shining stars. Next time you have a chance to look at your giving patterns and the form comes around that says, you know, local, wider church, you'll be able to pray about that and respond. So I really believe that our gifts reveal God's love. It enables Aboriginal ministries, healing, and reconciliation work. Our gifts enable refugee ministers, and our gifts support human rights. We are the hands and feet of Jesus doing that work. By continually supporting our mission and service, we turn Christ's light into a beacon of hope for others. Thank you and amen.